There's a place in New York where you can walk through the actual front doors of the world's most famous recording studio, Abbey Road. Through those doors, past the Beatles, Pink Floyd, Radiohead, and countless other rock giants. Where can you find those doors? At the Hard Rock Cafe Times Square. The Abbey Road doors and thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock Cafes, Hard Rock Casinos, and Hard Rock Hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred with you in Little Steven's Underground Garage, and I've got a throwback coolest conversations now that features Southside Johnny of Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes. It originally aired September 11th, 2015. And in it, we speak about his Soul Time album that had come out the month prior, how he grew up with rhythm and blues, his close working relationship early on with Stephen Van Zandt, as well as the Asbury Park scene and how it's changed over the years. First, though, let's listen to some of his then coolest song in the world, Spinning, followed by my interview with Johnny on your Coolest Conversations throwback presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage. You got
this is the Mighty Manfred, and today I'm very honored to be speaking with John Lyon, better known to all as Southside Johnny, lead singer and frontman for the long-running Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes. Hi, John, how are you?
I'm good. I don't know how much of an honor it is to talk to me, but everybody has their weird kinks, so...
Well, from my perspective, it is. So, before we started talking here, we were listening to Spinning, opening track to the new album, Soul Time. When is it not Soul Time with Southside Johnny?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, we've diverged occasionally. We did a blues album, and then there's been a number of things. The last album was much more rock and roll with two guitars. And this time, I just really wanted to explore some of the 70s, 60s, and 70s soul roots that I have. I thought it was a time for a fun summer album that people can dance to and forget their troubles. As I said, the last album, Pills and Ammo, was filled with a lot of anger after the collapse of the monetary system and people were out of work and losing their houses. But I think things are better, and the trigger of it was I was at a liquor store that was attached to a grocery store, and they played music, and they played Superfly by Curtis Mayfield, and it came on, and all these people pushing their little carts started bopping. And I thought, that's what I need to do. I need to make a record that people can bop their heads to while they're in the liquor store. And that was kind of the genesis of it. And it took about a year and a half to make it.
Oh, wow. That's a pretty cool imagery there. Tell me about your history getting started. When did you first hear blues and soul stuff? And when did that first grab you?
Well, I actually grew up with that kind of music. My parents liked jazz, but they also liked T-Bone Walker and Sonny Boy Williamson, the first, you know, Ray Charles. So I heard a lot of blues and rhythm and blues growing up. I always liked that kind of music. The blues shouters like Jimmy Rushing and Winoni Harris, Big Joe Turner. You know, it just always sounded like somebody was having a good time somewhere. And I, you know, as a young kid, I really enjoyed that. And then I started to discover records on my own. And there was a radio station that played a lot of blues, like Elmore James and Muddy Waters. We used to go to a record store in Asbury Park and buy all the cutouts for 79 cents. And they'd be John Lee Hooker album, you know, those sort of musicians. And that's the kind of music I really like. That's one of the reasons I learned how to play harmonica, because I love Jimmy Reed, Sonny Boy Williamson, and all of the great players, Little Walter.
So that's interesting there when you're talking about your folks. I think you mentioned Sonny Boy Williamson number one. Did I hear that right?
That's correct. There's two Sonny Boy Williamsons.
well, right. And I guess what's interesting to me is it's number two that people are far more familiar with. And
right.
when they think of Sonny Boy, they're thinking of that guy who just appropriated, you know, number one's name. And I don't think number one gets his due. That's very cool that your parents had that in the household.
The Bluebird 78s and the RCA 78s and Jazz Gilliam and all those kind of guys. I mean, these were great harmonica players and singers. And I remember my mother used to listen to Elevator Woman. Elevate me, mommy. Mama, 13 floors down. Elevate me, mama, 13 floors down. You're the elevatedest woman in town. And my mother loved that. And you know, she was such an infectious person that she would laugh and sing along with it. And as a kid, you know, you adored your mother, and it made her happy. So it made me happy, too.
Excellent. Well, so back to the track, the new track, Spinning. Not only is it the opening cut to the album, but it's also the coolest song in the world this week. And as it starts off, you know, I just with the title, too, I guess I'm thinking that Blood, Sweat, and Tears spinning wheel song. But then it kicks in, takes us into the Stax world, and especially about halfway through, there's this great horn line. I don't know where it's the bridge or not, but the horns become real prominent in the mix. Now, that song is written by you and your piano guy, Jeff Kozik. And he was also on the Pills and Ammo record working with you. When did you hook up with that guy? When did you start working with him? And what's the backstory on him?
He came in to replace somebody. Somebody recommended him. And we hit it off, I guess it's 13 or more years ago. And we've been songwriting partners now for over 10 years. We've written a lot of things together, and he's just a really great talent. He's a great keyboard player, but he's also a terrific songwriter, and it's very easy for us to get together, and I'll have lyrics, or he'll have lyrics, or we'll come up with ideas, and it makes it very easy, and a lot of good stuff has come out of it. I'm very happy to have him in the band and work with him. He comes from real Americana stock. His uncle, or his great-uncle, I forget which, is Buell Kazee, or was Buell Kazee, and he was a very famous banjo and guitar player who was recorded way back, and his music helped start the folk music boom of the late 50s and early 60s. So Jeff comes from an important family as far as American music is concerned, and he is really well-versed in all types of music, everything from R&B and New Orleans to English rock like Elton John and those kind of things. He is a real aficionado of lots of music, and it really comes through.
Now, with him, you guys produced this album and the previous one, Pills and Ammo. Is that right?
That's right. And we also did Go into Jukesville. He played on Messing with the Blues. I think I'm forgetting one, which wouldn't surprise anybody who knows me.
You've played a lot of albums, though. As a producer, have you ever used any of those Stax guys? Ever worked with Steve Cropper, any of those guys?
I have not used Steve Cropper. We did make one album, Jukes, down in Barry Beckett's Muscle Shoals, and we met a lot of those people. Of course, Barry Beckett is on a bunch of that Aretha Franklin-y things, and he's part of that whole scene down there in the South. And that was an interesting experience. We met a lot of people. But Steve Cropper has played with half all my guys. They've all played with him in one form or another. I've never met him. I don't know why. It's just one of those things. I've met so many people over the years. Steve is just one of those guys I've never met. He knows who I am, and he said, come on down. Let's go do this. Let's go do that. But I never get a chance, so that's the way it is.
Well, hey, you finish this record, get started on the next one, and head on down there. I'm sure he'll be up for it.
Well, I may do that, you know. I mean, he's supposedly a very fun guy to hang out with, so maybe eventually I'll get to meet him.
Well, you know, you two guys get together, there'll be plenty of stories shooting back and forth. I'd have to think being in the studio would be a very pleasant experience.
Yeah, he probably wouldn't get anything done.
Exactly.
He'd be telling stories and trying to outbrag each other and that kind of stuff.
So early on, the man here, Little Steven, was producing albums, writing a lot of the songs. Why wasn't that guy in the band? Why wasn't Steven ever in the band?
He was. You know, he was in the band before they became the Jukes. He was right in the transition period from the Blackberry Blues Band to the Asbury Jukes, and it was actually his idea to call it that. I wanted a horn band, and he wanted a horn band, and it was very difficult back then to try to get a whole horn section. A lot of guys didn't want to play in a rock and roll band. I don't know why. But he was in the band, and then Bruce had made Born to Run, or was going to make Born to Run, and really needed Steven by his side. He really needed somebody to trust. And that was cool with me. I understood that Bruce things are getting pretty deep as far as fame and sharks circling, trying to, you know, lead him astray. And I thought it would be a great partnership for the two of them. And obviously it was. But Steven was in the band, and then he left, and Billy Rush came in. And then it's been over 130 people since then. We've had over 130 people playing his band.
They've been schooled by Southside Johnny.
That's right. Destroyed by Destroyed, one by one.
Well, so you kind of alluding to, you were mentioning there the relationship and the shark circling, and he needed somebody to trust. This is Springsteen. And then with yourself, that Hearts of Stone album, that received a lot of critical acclaim. And then you were set to go on tour supportive of it. You had an accident. And then in 1991, you're back with Little Steven. This great album, mm-hmm. Better Days, comes out. The record company goes out of business. Let me ask you, do you feel like you guys ever got your proper due? How do you feel about all that? What's the perspective?
Well, I don't want fame. I wouldn't want to be as big as Bruce or any of those guys. I wouldn't want to be as well known as Steve Van Zandt. I mean, it's too much of a burden for me. I'm too reclusive, and I don't like people bothering me. But I'm sure the money's nice. But I'm happy that one of the things when we made the first record, I mean, I Don't Want to Go Home album, Steven and I made a promise for myself that if I wasn't enjoying it, I wouldn't do it. And it wouldn't be for the money or anything like that. And after all these years, I still do enjoy it. So I've been allowed to make the music I want to make. Nobody's ever forced me to make a record. I made mistakes along the way, but they're my own mistakes. So that's something I can live with. But I like where I am right now. You know, I just made another record. I can do anything I want. We made an acoustic-ish album not too long ago. We do live albums if we feel like it. We do whatever we want. And that's what I want out of music, to be allowed to make the music I want.
So I'm not from New Jersey. Did you know that? Now you do.
I guess that.
You guess that. So what I'm getting at here is you and the Springsteen, the part of this, what's always referred to as this Jersey Shore scene, which I really don't know very much about. So tell me a minute about that. What was or what is a Jersey Shore scene? And does one exist now?
Yes, there's a very good scene here in Asbury Park. They've got a number of clubs, the Saint and the Bowling Alley and the McClune's, and there's a number of other places too. The Stone Pony, of course, is still up.
Right.
But it started out when we were young, when we were teenagers. I, at least, used to go to Asbury Park and listen to the bands play outside because you couldn't get in. We were too young to go in, but there was a big scene in Asbury Park because it was a shore town and there was a lot of entertainment. So the people came down in the summer. And when we started playing in bands, we had the Hullabaloo clubs where we all kind of met each other. And, you know, I met a lot of musicians from the Hullabaloo clubs. There was one in, probably four or five of them in New Jersey. And then the big thing was the Upstage Club in Asbury Park was a place where there was no alcohol served. It was for kids, teenagers,
right?
And there were built-in amps and a set of drums and you know, all the equipment you needed. You just had to show up with your guitar, or in my case, just show up and sing. And that became our little school of rock. And that's where I met Steven. I met Bruce. I met Dave Sanchez there. And all of these different people that became part of this pool of musicians. And we were all in bands together and all listening to each other's records and really influencing each other. It was a real camaraderie. It was not a competition. And I think that there was a real strength that came out of that, a feeling that there were people who supported you in whatever you wanted to do and would come and help you and play with you. And it was just a great place to be. And it really helped us commit ourselves to music. And that's really what the Jersey scene was about, was this idea that we were going to be musicians come hell or high water.
And you've achieved that, though, right? I mean,
yeah, it's amazing to me. After all these years, I mean, it's been over 40 years I've been making music, and I still can't believe they pay me to do it.
Well, speaking of them making that music, let's talk about another track off the new album, I'm Not That Lonely. Now, who wrote that? Is that you and Jeff again?
Jeff and I wrote that song, yeah. We were basing these songs on a lot of the other songs that we liked growing up. Of course, I'm older than he is. And that song is based on, well, kind of the Four Tops, but there's also, there was another song, I forget which one it was, but we would listen to these songs and we go, oh, we can write something like that. And we used sort of the templates of great feeling songs where even if the message is, well, this is a slightly angry guy who's telling his girl his girlfriend that, you know, he no longer wants to be with her because she's wasting his time. She's not sincere. She's not serious. But really, it's about dance music. And most of the album is about things you can feel good, turn up on the radio in your car or dance at home or at the show. That's what that song's all about.
Well, we're going to take a listen to that now. But first, let me say thanks so much, Don, for speaking with me today as part of our Coolest Conversations.
Well, thank you. Thanks. And please tell Stephen, thanks for playing the record.
I sure will.
Tell him the check's in the mail.
All right. Well, here now is Southside Johnny Asbury Jukes off the new album Soul Time doing I'm Not That Lonely. Aaron Little Stevens, Underground Garage.
Woman, look me in the eye. You've told me your lesson. I'm telling you just what I want to say. Because games are chill and I'm a full grown man. It's time I finally made you understand.
There's a place in New York where you can walk through the actual front doors of the world's most famous recording studio, Abbey Road. Through those doors past the Beatles, Pink Floyd, Radiohead, and countless other rock giants. Where can you find those doors? At the Hard Rock Cafe Times Square. The Abbey Road doors and thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock Cafes, Hard Rock Casinos, and Hard Rock Hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.